This is a podcast for Wednesday, January 9th, 2013, Theories of Knowledge. And I was just talking about the Students for Liberty Club reconstituting this term. We've been on hiatus because I've been on sabbatical. So if you're interested in, say, doing a three-credit co-op in political science and doing some organizing, or you just want to show up at the meetings or do some agitation, you believe in individual rights, personal freedom, if you're against the man, if you think that the state shouldn't be ordering people about and telling them how to live their lives, this might be the club for you. If you're a radical or if you just like living your life as you choose according to your own values and goals and not having other people tell you what to do, whether it's your neighbor or the city council or the state of Oregon or the federal government, this might be the club for you. So you can just send me a Moodle message, or there's a Facebook page, LCC Students for Liberty, if you want to join on that. And I'll be posting updates there as students express that interest. Yeah, so we were talking about the nature of truth, and we didn't quite get to knowledge. So we were talking about two theories of truth. So what are the two primary theories of truth? I'm going to get a black pen. It works really good. I pulled this out of the drawer and somebody put in an old pen. Light up all the way. It's dark in here. It's dark up here. Maybe I just use the bright studio lights in the studio classroom. Oh, thank you very much. Are there any lights, more lights we can go on? Just crank it, everything on full blast. That's a lot better. I don't even know if I call relativism a theory, because it doesn't really, like, it doesn't claim to say anything about the universe. It claims that everything you could say about the universe is your own perceptions or beliefs. It's not about anything except for you. I mean, one way to think about relativism is, according to relativism, it's all about you. Oh, it looks like there's like some sleet out there or something like that. The raindrops are all getting all wonky there.
It's getting good.
It's like, oh, gotta love that winter weather. So, I'll try to be distracted. This is why classrooms should have no windows. If I was a student here, I'd just be looking at the back of the room the whole time. So, and if you have ADD, you can turn into a resume enhancer by going to teaching. Okay, so correspondence theory of truth. So the correspondence theory is what you might call the commonsensical theory of truth. It's the view that you have before your mind is ruined by public education and crazy professors at the University of Oregon would tell you that we live in a postmodern, post-structuralist world, and that up is down and left is right, and whatever you believe is true for you. And as long as you believe in your heart, that's the only thing that matters. And any thought that like fills your, you know, bumps into your empty head is as valid as any other thought. And that's all a bunch of nonsense. So the correspondence theory of truth says, you know, that truth is, you know, that which corresponds. Oh, what's another word for corresponds? Yeah, what's another way of saying this?
Fits.
Fits reality. What's another
explains.
Way of saying this? Explains. Explanation might have more to do with knowledge.
Works.
Works probably belongs over in this column. If you say truth is what works, that's a pragmatic definition.
Works with reality.
Okay, works with reality. Well, I mean, what is the truth anyway? Is truth a thing, or is truth like a? Is it more as an object or quality?
Quality.
It's a quality, right? So it's a quality, and what is a quality of?
Reality.
actually, truth isn't something that is directly is a quality of reality. It's about reality, but it's not a quality of reality.
Is it actuality? Mm-hmm. Is it actually there?
Truth is a quality of something. Like, what kinds of things are truth?
Being.
What's
knowledge?
That?
Being.
Did you say being?
Being.
No, it's more like existence and reality. So you have being, existence, and reality. Truth describes being, existence, or reality, but it's not a quality of it. Yes?
Is truth, like reality proves truth, or something like
well, reality can't, like reality just is, though. So reality can't really prove anything, because reality just exists. I mean, in order to prove something, what does it mean to prove something? Like, I mean, what does this paperclip prove? It can't give an argument. It can't provide evidence.
A certain amount of weight.
Well, it's like that's what it is, but it's not. That's not what it proves. See what I mean? The proof involves like reasoning and argument and evidence.
So truth is reality.
Truth is
quality of knowledge. Actually, that's closer. That's closer. Yeah.
The text said truth is a quality which applies to belief statements and propositions which describe the world the way it is.
Right. So let's start out with the statement. So a statement might be something like the cat is on the mat, right? About this. The cat is on the mat. So that's a statement. Now you can have like a sentence which might be that in a particular language. So the statement the cat is on the mat, you know, could be expressed in different ways, right? You could say, well, what's French for cat or
chat?
Yeah, those.
That's cool.
Something like that. Le cat est sur le mat, right? So it's expressing the same statement, just in a different language. So these are different sentences that express the same statement. So the statement is sort of more abstract. It's language independent. So both those sentences express the same statement. And, you know, statements can be written down. They can be uttered verbally. And then you have a belief. What's a belief? Yeah, so this is some kind of mental thing. It's like a statement. You can think about it as being like a mental statement. And then there's this third thing called a proposition. A proposition is a sort of abstract entity that covers all these things. So this is the abstract entity expressed by statements, sentences, beliefs. I don't know if I'm going to add anything else to this. You know, sometimes there are different words for beliefs, like opinions. Might as well add beliefs. I think an opinion is sort of a form of belief. But it's said. So I'll usually go back and forth between talking about beliefs or propositions or statements. I just want you to know the difference between those. These are all these things up here are different forms, are expressed by propositions. And the proposition is the thing which is true or false. And the true or false, these are both qualities or values that it can have. So a true proposition or a true statement or a true belief is one which describes the world the way it actually is. So we can say a proposition which describes the world. Another way of talking about reality, right? the way it is. And know that this is independent of feelings, beliefs, perception. It's just what is, regardless of what any conscious being is thinking or feeling or perceiving. It's so truth stands on its own. Like last time we talked about the planet Pluto. Before human beings emerged from the primordial slime, Pluto existed. And Pluto, you know, was this ball of stone and ice in an irregular orbit, ninth out in the solar system. And before we, you know, we couldn't, as I said, we couldn't see Pluto till 1930 through telescopes. Could you not click that pen, please?
Sorry.
Thank you. So you couldn't see Pluto until 1930. Pluto was still there. That's the correspondence theory of truth. People used to think the Earth was flat. Was the Earth ever flat? No, it never was actually flat. People believed it was flat, and that belief was false. Now, does that mean we should make fun of them or, you know, say that they were bad people because they believed that silly thing? Well, you know, if you're living in the Middle Ages and everybody in your community believes that what the church says, and the church says that the world is flat, or, you know, later on, actually, the earth being flat. You know, it's early Middle Ages, you know, maybe some people believe that, but typically what the sort of conflict was whether the earth revolved around the sun or vice versa. And so people thought that the earth was round, but it was the center of the universe, and the sun went along around it with all the other planets. And that was like the big conflict with Galileo. There wasn't any discussion with Galileo about the earth being flat, but there was a problem where the church said, oh no, the earth is the center of the universe, and all the planets and the sun as well revolve around it. Did the sun ever revolve around the earth?
No.
Never did, right? Now, a lot of people believe that it did, but they were just wrong. Why were they wrong? What does it mean to say they're wrong? Their belief was false. What does it mean to have a false belief?
Propositions didn't imply the truth.
Yeah, you have a proposition that describes the world one way, and it's another way. So, you know, fairly straightforward. The cat is on the mat. The cat is on the mat is true if and only if the cat is on the mat. The cat's not on the mat, and you say the cat is on the mat, that statement is false. If you believe that the cat is on the mat, and you look over there and the cat's on the mat, and you turn your head and somebody asks you whether the cat is on the mat, and you say the cat is on the mat, and you turn around and see that he's moved, then your belief was false, and it sort of changes when you realize, oh, I was wrong, the cat wasn't on the mat after all. And again, commonsensically, we do this all the time. Each and every person, I hope, has done this about, like, Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy, socialism. Well, maybe you're probably not quite there yet, but, you know, there are all sorts of beliefs that you change over your lifetime. And sometimes people might change their beliefs because, oh, their boyfriend or girlfriend has that belief, and they're like, oh, this kind of seems like the way to go. Or they might get, you know, feelings or have an emotional experience, or maybe they'll fit in better if they kind of go along with the crowd and they fool themselves into believing something. But most of the time, people believe new things and reject old things, not because it's fashionable or cool or they have an emotional experience, but because they think that they were wrong about the way they perceived the world or understood the world or conceived the world, and that it's something different. And that's why you change a belief. You're like, oh, I was mistaken. And when you find out you're wrong, you get some new evidence that starts staring you in the face. You don't hold on to your old evidence. Like, I remember hearing about the country Niger. I was like, oh, is that like another name for Nigeria? Nope, I was totally wrong. There's like a lot of things like this. You go along with this some sort of ridiculous notion in your head or something kicking around in your brain from when you were a kid, and you find out, oh no, that's totally wrong. Anybody have one to share here? A rude awakening you had or something? Yeah.
I used to think the E on the fuel gauge of an automobile stood for exercise pushing.
That's interesting. That sounds like a joke that somebody made up, but you were like serious about it. Yeah. Yeah, so it's like sometimes, usually it's little things, but sometimes it can be big, you know. Like my brother, for example, he just he seems to be getting religion. So he said he was talking. He's like this guy that works in the oil and gas business. He made $1 million, lost $1 million, and now he's wondering if there's something more meaningful to do than chasing filthy lucre. And so, and he's talking to one of his line workers, and the guy's like talking about Jesus, and it's like when the finger of God touches you. Touches him right in the chest. Jeff, I felt something. It's like, there's something to this stuff. I had this feeling radiating all around my body. It's like, now he's like listening to radio preachers and kind of thinking about this whole Jesus thing. He's like, no, it's not what I like. It's not all the hellfire and damnation. It's all about forgiveness and God wanting you to be a better person and make the world a better place. And so, and he's like, you know, you can tell he's kind of excited about it. And before, it's like for him, you know, those religious people were kind of nutty and, you know, they did some good in the world, but then they had their place. But now he's sort of got the fever. And so but he's changing his worldview. And so it may be that he, you know, he's going to change from being like an agnostic to being, a Christian or some kind of religious person. And he's doing it, why? Because he had this experience and he's interpreting it a certain way. And he thinks that the experience wasn't like, you know, the power of suggestion or anything. He thinks there's something real about it. And that all these years where he has sort of dismissed religion, he thinks was wrong. And some people go the other way, right? They have a religious faith and then they say, oh, I was totally delusional, or they say this. There's something funny about this religion I've been practicing. It just doesn't seem to add up. It doesn't fit in with what I'm learning in my college classes or what I'm reading on the internet, or I'm just sort of studying a lot of science and now it just doesn't seem to really fit. And then they end up, you know, becoming agnostic or an atheist, or people switch religions. You know, all sorts of things happen where people shift their worldviews. Sometimes people shift their worldviews about all kinds of things: human nature, politics. I'm trying to think of the big ones: morality. So why do people change their beliefs? Well, they change it because they think, oh, my beliefs weren't in concert with reality. They didn't correspond with reality. I want to switch them to something that's more in keeping with reality. I want to understand the world the way it is, and I don't want to like be mistaken about, you know, the way it is. So what do you think? Does that make sense? Or is there any objections? Or is there anything incoherent about that or questionable? Poke holes in it? The correspondence theory of truth? Let me come back to the relativists. What's a relativist theory say in contrast to that? What's their view? Yeah.
It's true if you believe it to be true.
Yeah, so truth equals just belief, perception. And they ask this question, true for who?
True for yourself. Believer, we have our own truth to create our own reality.
Yeah, so you think that whatever you believe is true for you. But, and so people say, well, is that, you know, it's not, might be true for you, but it's not true for me. And it treats truth as something which is relative to the individual. And so it's just like, think about the concept of, say, a game. You say, so your friend says, let's play a game. And you say, okay, which game? And they say, oh, let's just play the game. And they go, wait a minute, there is no like general game. There's like different kinds of games. There's backgammon, hockey, the Monopoly, video games, right? There's different kinds of games. There's no general kind of game. And the relativist tends to think of a person's belief system as being like a particular kind of game, and you can't kind of mix and match it with other people. It's that, now sometimes people play the same game, right? Like people who are, say, Muslims, they're playing the Muslim game. Or people who are Americans, they're kind of playing the American game. And maybe there's a lot of variations in the American game, right? So there's different sets of rules. And you can get this in, like, you know, professional sports, right? You can have, like, the, I don't know, like, there's some, like, what is there, some... What's that controversial rule in baseball that people argue about? Kevin Costner talked about it in his rant in Old Durham. I know anything about sports.
Everything about baseball.
Yeah. So you get variations in it. But basically, it's the same game.
And then you got people that have completely different games, and they make up their own game. And so the idea is that truth is a sort of belief system that each person has. Some people's beliefs overlap, and then they have the same belief. But belief is always relative to the individual. Whatever you believe is true for you. Now, how could you ever have a false belief under relativism? Let's talk about that before. You know, yeah.
If you don't actually believe it.
Does that make it false, though? It's just a belief you don't have.
Well, if you keep telling yourself that you're a snake, but you don't believe that you're a snake.
But then do you really have that belief, if you don't believe it?
Maybe.
Good.
It's like a double negative.
Yeah, it's like you might... Sorry, way in the back there. Speak loudly, please.
If you have a good justification for it.
A little bit louder.
If you have a good justification for it.
Now, why do you need a justification as a relativist? If you believe it, then it's true for you. Just believe it. Who needs reasons? Who needs arguments? Who needs evidence? It's like, I believe it in my heart, therefore it's true for me.
You want to have other people understand who you something.
That's what the motto is, persuade someone.
I don't think you need it, but you probably would naturally have it.
I could, like, why would it? I mean, there's a lot of good ways to persuade people besides giving arguments or evidence. I could give an emotional appeal. I could sort of, maybe I could bribe them. I could, like, use force on them. The force thing usually ends badly, depending on what kind of situation. I want to, like, maybe try to pull a trick on him or try to con him into leaving or something before I'd start giving evidence. Yeah.
You wouldn't really have beliefs, you just have truths, since all your beliefs are truths to yourself.
Well, I guess these would be identical, right? So, people like it when other people believe similar to them, so I mean, you make a good point that if you want to convince someone else, you might give an argument. But it wouldn't be as if you're trying to convince someone that, hey, the way you think about the world is wrong. You should think about the world like this. What you're really saying is believe, have the same beliefs I do, because that will make you feel better. Or that will make you feel superior, or what have you. Yeah.
Well, don't you think that, I mean, a lot of people, like, I mean, I noticed from a religious standpoint, I mean, I hear a lot of people saying, well, this is just true for me. You can believe whatever you want, kind of coming from, trying to be, anti-pushing whatever they believe on you. But at the same time, they'll say, but this is why I believe, they'll go on and on, and this is why I believe it, and, it'd be great if you did too, or, there are definitely people who wouldn't have that tendency, but I think in, 90% of the time, there's that tendency to always want others to feel your way and try to, make them think like you.
Yeah, people like others who are like them, right? And that's maybe why people want to persuade others to believe as they do. The whole idea of, like, this is just my truth, but here are all the reasons why it's true, seems like you're getting mixed signals for that person. Maybe they're confused, or maybe they have conflicting emotions or something. But sometimes people see that as a defense mechanism. If you say... for example, sorry if I'm stepping on your toes here. I'll apologize in advance. But, like, for example, it's a historical fact that Joseph Smith was convicted of money digging in upstate New York. And there's actual court records which show that he, basically that the result of his excavations could be seen all over upstate New York. And money digging, you go to somebody's house and say, I have the power of a seer, I can find buried treasure on your property. That pen thing is really certainly sorry. You have the same
thing. I wasn't clicking it, was I?
Yeah, it was... I'm easily distracted.
Maybe I'll just move the bag of
what was it? Oh, yeah, so Joseph Smith. So Joseph Smith Jr., founder of Mormonism, was going around with Joseph Smith Sr., his dad, knocking on doors and saying, hey, I'm a seer, I can find buried treasure in your property. Give me a daily wage and I'll find something. And then he'd, like, dig for a few days and your property would be all dug up. And he's like, well, I haven't found anything yet. And eventually people say, well, do you think you're going to find anything? I don't know, the I'm getting a sense that something's here, but I'm not sure exactly what. You want me to dig some more? And so it's a form of fraud, and he's actually convicted of this. So when Joseph Smith claimed to have found the golden plates of the Book of Mormon, you might be a wee bit skeptical, right? So that would be evidence. But if the Mormon missionaries come to your house and you say, you tell them about this, and maybe, I don't know, if a person wanted overkill, they might, say, bring out, like, say, printed transcripts of the court records or a historical record and along with the citations and so on. And you know, my experience is, like, I'd be, see a grown man cry, or at least, you know, I suppose, if you call 18 a grown man. But you see, you know, they'd say, I know in my heart that Joseph Smith is a true prophet of God. And these guys would, like, break down crying. Felt kind of bad about it. Kind of, oh, just, you know, I listen to Glenn Beck. Oh, that's kind of what Mormons do. They cry a lot. And particularly when you give your testimony, you know, there's a tradition in the Mormon church that when you give your testimony, it's supposed to be this emotional burning in the bosom. And so you like sort of testify that this thing is true. And so it's kind of this defense mechanism, right? So sometimes people have sort of emotional reasons to hold on to something when it's being threatened. In the same way, people will say, oh, this is my truth. You know, it's like, you know, don't try to take away my precious truth with all your argument and evidence, because it makes me feel good to believe it. And so people don't always believe things for rational reasons. But if you're going to be, you know, a rational person and you want to live your life in a rational fashion, which means, you know, using reason and logic and evidence to understand the world, try to get an objective, impartial picture of the world, even if it seems unpleasant, or even if maybe it's a kind of a shock to the system, even if it makes you unhappy and you still want to know the way the world is, because it's going to sort of help you cope and make your way through, and maybe you get like a more real and lasting happiness, you know, then you're a philosopher. So, but the relativists will have none of this. They'll say, oh, no, it's all individualistic. It's all, it's according to your perception. And so, you think of, whether God exists, or whether Mormonism is a correct religion, whether it's Islam, or whether it's Christianity, or whether it's Buddhism, or Hinduism, or any of the other, you know, candidates for the true religion, or maybe none of them, right? They all can't be true at once. And this is what the relativist really likes. The relativist wants to have everything be true for everyone at once. Which, you know, if you believe in an objective world, and that things are true or false, that doesn't really work out.
Do you think that a lot of quantum theorists maybe are relativists?
I was worried about, like, when scientists try to become philosophers. They tend to be like, even though they're really good scientists and they're good at working out like little equations and things, and they got their models, when they start delving into philosophy, sometimes it can be a train wreck.
Well, I mean, because everyone has their own personal beliefs. I was just asking that because there's some really weird tests that have, like, found one that, like, show the electron moves like waves and things like that. And so, like,
sure,
there's a lot of weird things like that, like that are relative to the observer. So I was just, like, wondering, like, what you thought of that.
So there are certain things that are relative to the observer in this sense. Your situation is going to depend on what you perceive. It is going to determine what you perceive. So if you're, say, on a spaceship, so if you're in a spaceship traveling close to the speed of light, and you make like a journey, like say you're gone for like a year, what's going to happen when you do that?
Everyone's going to be way older.
Yeah, so the time's going to slow down for you, because time's relativistic. Time actually slows down as your velocity increases. And so, you know, that's like, you know, Einstein's relativity. But it's not as if it's true for you that time is moving at this pace, and it's true for them that time is moving at a different pace. What is the case is that time is relative to velocity as described in, you know, Einstein's papers on relativity. That's an objective picture about the universe. there's no relativity in the truth of it. The only relativity is in, this is hard to describe. It's not as if something's true for one person and true for another person. It's just there's an objective picture, and depending on where you are in that objective picture, you have a different experience, and different things are going to happen to you. It's not as if, like, if you have two people standing next to each other, and one person, a piano drops on from a high window. You would say, well, it's true for him that he's experienced a piano on top of him, but it's not true for him that there's a piano on top of him, therefore truth is relative. You'd say, that guy was standing near the place where the piano dropped, and that's why the piano hit him, and not the guy next to him. That's why that guy's dead and this guy's alive. But it's not like being alive or dead is relative, right? Depending on where you place it in the world is and your situation, you have different perceptions and different experiences. But that assumes that there's an objective world that everything's a part of, and that there are laws governing it, which determine what happens and in what way. Okay, so why would anybody believe the relativist picture? And it seemed to me to be obviously self-contradictory. I don't know. Does anyone want to argue in favor of relativism? Now that poisoned the well. So give me either an argument in favor of relativism, or tell me like why a person might find relativism really attractive. Yeah.
Perhaps someone would lean towards relativism for a level of comfort, so that trying to say this plainly, but. For example, if someone believes in Jesus, and that's their comfort level, so that that person can live life knowing that there's a higher power there watching them, then that person may feel more comfortable living life knowing that he or she is being watched or looked over, whereas that Christian would say to an atheist that, oh, Jesus is true for me, but not true for you. Because mm-hmm. Jesus makes me comfortable, yet it makes you uncomfortable. Perhaps.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you can sort of, it's uncomfortable to have your beliefs challenged.
Yeah.
And to have to defend yourself all the time. This is a way of sort of, fending off and dismissing all challenges and say, well, your arguments are irrelevant because this is my belief, it's not your belief. You don't have the right to tell me my belief is wrong because my belief is mine. If you're attacking my belief, you're attacking me. And I'm not going to stand for that. And so this is just my personal belief, right? What's a personal belief as opposed to, what's an impersonal belief? People always say, oh, that's my personal belief or that's your personal belief.
Yeah, the same thing.
It seems like it's just a belief, but it's the idea that, there's something sacrosanct about it or something. That it's mine, and so don't attack this belief because it's mine. If you attack that belief, you're attacking me, and you shouldn't attack me. Yes?
I guess kind of an argument for would be, I'm very skeptic about everything. I think that relativism, from what I can understand, is a little blunt, and more of just, what I think is how it's going to be, and that's not how I would personally go about it, but kind of in argument for them would say that, just from my point of view, I couldn't, say to a relativist, I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, just 100% that you're incorrect, whatever their belief is, just because that's, I'm a skeptic, so I can't tell you without, just hands down that you're wrong.
So that's a little different. So the skeptic view. So skeptic.
That would kind of, validate that they're, from my point of view, that there is possibility that there's, that relativists have a point, I guess you could say.
Well, there's a difference between, skepticism says that knowledge is impossible. And so they don't say the truth is relativistic. They say the world is one way. It's just that there's no way for us to know anything about it. I guess you get two kinds of skeptics, too. You get the person who's like disgusted about everything and says, well, I can't tell you wrong, you're wrong because nobody knows anything. Or there's a skeptic who says, well, there's certain things that we know, and if you stray beyond them, then yeah, you're making these claims that I'm going to knock down. And that's more like the skeptic society, like Michael Shermer or the Amazing Randi, some of the skeptic organizations aren't skeptical about everything, but they're skeptical about claims which, you know, go against basic science or aren't supported by good evidence. And that's kind of like a moderate skeptic. But skepticism is different from relativism. In relativism, knowledge is really easy to get. Which you know whatever you believe. So whatever things you currently fill up your brain right now, that's your knowledge. Because knowledge is just belief, and belief is truth, and it's all sort of interrelated.
I know it's different. I was just trying to give them a little bit of something rather than just. It sounded like the room was in a resounding no, completely on relativism. So,
well, you might say there's a similar attitude. If you're a skeptic, you extreme skeptic, you might say, "Well, I can't tell you're wrong because nobody knows anything." And that, you know, there's nothing to argue about if people aren't concerned with who's right and who's wrong because nobody can know. And so you don't have to fight over it. And so you can hold hands and see between my eyes, and you'll be happy, the world will be banished from the planet. A lot of people have that attitude about relativism. That's one of their motivations for adhering to it. So, yes?
Being culturally inducted or, you know, being part of a community where that is all your belief, and you choose to take the relativist route because it's better for your community to just go along with what they have.
Mm-hmm. And that might be a sort of pragmatic reason, given this like less conflict. Sometimes less conflict might be good, but sometimes, you know, like I have colleagues that I have strong disagreements with, and we can disagree agreeably. My office is across from Steve Candy, even though we have some things in common, but a lot of things, particularly politics, and that we're on opposite sides of the spectrum on. And, you know, Steve's a political science professor, right? So that's his bag, so he takes a lot of this stuff really personally. But we can have cordial conversations, and we're friends, and everything works out. So it's not as if you have to be... it's not as if you hold the correspondence theory of truth, you have to be an ass about it, or you have to, like... Or that you can't have a civil conversation with a person. You might say, well, you're entitled to free belief, it's a free country, so far. Or, well, with lots of qualifiers, or what have you, but... You don't have to be necessarily dogmatic either. You can say, well, you know, I'm not really sure about that. I haven't really studied that. Tell me more about it. It's not as if you have to have a view on everything and whatever you get in an argument, you have to win. The correspondence theory just says that the world is one way, and it's our task as human beings to try to find out, you know, what it's like and to try to figure it out. And a lot of people think the best way to do that is by free inquiry. That's originally what the Academy was all about, free inquiry. See, there was another hand up someplace. Yes?
I was kind of going along with what she said, but I'd just say kind of out of fear of the unknown, so I said to an answer, I'm not sure.
Yeah, so there's sort of a comfort in believing something, even though you have evidence for it. It kind of gives you a set. If you have a belief that you can kind of order all your other beliefs around, maybe something you've had since you were a child that might give you some sense of comfort. So that goes back to the comfort idea here. Yes, sir?
Oh, I was going to say, fear of death.
Yeah.
I mean, death is kind of one of those things that truth and beliefs, what you believe, it kind of ends there. Because no one's alive to tell their story of death. And so you're kind of tailoring your own beliefs and think what you think is going to happen in the afterlife, mm-hmm. instead of having one concrete, you know, this is the way it is and disagree with it.
So you can have only pleasant beliefs, you know, believe what you want to believe. I've had people say things like, I say, well, so do you believe there's life after that? They say, oh, yes, I certainly do. And I say, well, why do you believe that? And they say, well, because I just can't believe that death is the end of everything, that we don't go on. I said, well, you just told me you didn't believe that. I'm asking why. And they'll say, well, ever since I was a small child, I always believed that there was a heaven. I say, okay, well, that's your personal biography, but I'm not looking for like a why as far as you know, in terms of your personal history. I want to know like if you have like a rational reason for it, or any evidence, or and they'll say, well, you know, I just hate the idea that when I die, that's it. And so that person is giving me an explanation in terms of a desire. And basically they'd say, well, I don't have any evidence, but I just really want this to be true. So I kind of like, I make myself believe it because I find it comforting. Now, I'm not sure that's necessarily a relativist position, but it fits in really easy with relativism in that as a relativist, whatever you believe is true for you. And so it's kind of like, a metaphysical view that goes along with that psychological evasion that people engage in. Now, so what about, like, iffy beliefs? So a lot of times people say, well, how can you say that there's one thing that's true for everybody with regard to morality or religion? Those sorts of things. Customs, values, or all those things. What would you say about those things? Don't those things seem kind of iffy? Because the correspondence theory says there's sort of one answer for those things, right?
What do you mean, like cultures?
Like, so it's saying, the correspondence theory and say maybe... if there's a truth for everything, there's a truth about, say, morality, and whether a woman ought to wear a headscarf or not, for example. Or, I think of another example. Whether women are more suited to traditional roles as bearers of children, keeper of hearth and home, or whether they ought to be, you know, independent and have full equality with men. And be, you know, working at jobs and maybe having a family inside or something. There's a real, you know, debate in different societies. And even in some societies, the women say, oh no, I just want to, you know, stay at home with the kids and I would want to have a job. And I would feel funny if I was making more money than my husband.
What about the idealism?
Well, it's like, yeah, the cultural relativism. It says, you know, cultural relativism says that that truth is relative to culture. Now, you have a kind of form of cultural relativism that says, look, it's ridiculous to say whether the earth is flat is relative or not. That's Looney Tunes. But they'll say, look, this idea of, like, you think about married rules for marriage and family or gender roles or customs, all that stuff, large groups of people around the planet have different ways of doing things. And you win in Rome, do as the Romanians do. So if you're in an Islamic country, you know, you're a woman, you just, you know, go around with a headscarf on. I remember I had an exchange student, her name was Aina. I think it was from Sweden or Norway. And, you know, during the summertime, you know, the Europeans are very cosmopolitan, and a woman wants to sunbathe, she'll take her top off, right? So I'm on this rafting group, you know, it's like a church function, right? So we're going down, and she says, it's okay to take my top off? Yeah, you know, and the guys were like, oh, hey, you know, but there's some girls in the raft that said, no, we don't do that here, right? So the idea is that you respect the customs and the land you're in. And I think the relativists would say, you know, if you grow up in like a sort of a climate that's freezing cold most of the time, but has like some nice warm sunny weather part of the time, and particularly maybe a better example would be like in Africa and Polynesia, people go around and the women usually go topless, and the men are usually just wearing a loincloth. And that's because it's hotter than hell down there, right? And people have dark skin. They got a lot of melanin in it. If the people in Finland went out like that, they'd freeze to death and they'd get third-degree burns because their skin is, like, really, really light. And so the idea is that all these customs, they come about for a reason. Culture is produced by the material conditions of society. And so different cultures have different ways of doing things. And if you believe in the correspondence theory and you think that there's sort of one truth for everybody, you're kind of being dogmatic and try to do a sort of one-size-fit-all approach to life. So what do you think about that as well? So, you know, in Iran, you get hanged for being gay. Hey, that's just what they do over there, right? In Egypt, when you're 5 years old, you know, Uncle Ahmed's coming over with a rusty knife to cut off your clitoris, make sure it turns you into a woman, that's fine. If you're an Inuit, you're getting kind of old, no social security for you. They're going to drag you out in the snow, or I guess you're supposed to go voluntarily, but I think if you sort of, you know, fall asleep and can't be woken up readily, they sort of drag you out when you're not paying too much attention. So there's a lot of, you know, what I would call barbaric customs. In India, if your husband dies, what good is a woman without a husband, right? Leap onto the funeral pyre and burn yourself alive. Otherwise, you'll be a prostitute or a beggar for the rest of your life. Now, thanks to Western imperialism, that custom got wiped out. For the most part in India, there might be a few isolated cases in rural India, but the one thing that the British imperialists did, when they came in, along with a lot of bad stuff, don't get me wrong, but they said, hey, none of this, you know, no jumping on the funeral pyre, and you know, you should take care of these women who are widowed from their husbands. Yes?
So are you saying that the relativist would say that whatever customs that culture holds is true for them, and then
yeah,
the correspondence theory believer would say it's wrong?
Yeah, the correspondence. There's sort of like the difference between metaphysical relativism. So I may make this distinction. So metaphysical relativism says, you know, the earth is flat was true for 's true sword, a medieval serf or something, right? Medieval, he'd be a knight, I guess his name is True Sword. Right, he has no idea better. If he believes that, if his society believes that it's true for him. But then there's cultural relativism, which says that basically, or sometimes it's kind of hard to distinguish cultural or ethical relativism. Which says that, you know, morality, issues of good and evil, right and wrong, is relative. Morality or customs, you know, appropriate, but appropriate, the appropriate way to live. But there's no sort of right way to live. Yeah.
Do you think that the relativists, like, I mean, they say, you know, everyone has their own beliefs, you know, your personal beliefs, that's okay. Do you think that a relativist will, you know, have their own personal beliefs and think that that is, in a way, not universal truth, and they're just saying you can have your beliefs to avoid argument? Or do you think that relativists legitimately think that everyone has different truths and that, in a way, there's infinite amount of truths because everyone's truths are, in fact, true?
It's a good question. If I were to dive into the mind of the relativist, I can only go on what they say. But people say things like, well, that's your reality, or that's what's true for you. And I just don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, what's that?
But then when I talk to them more, they'll say things like, well, that's just his personal belief. I said, yeah, and if I say, yeah, but it's wrong, they'll say, well, you don't have a right to tell him that. So it comes down to sort of, I think, usually, if you talk to someone who says they're relativist enough, they have some confusion between, you know, having a really fervent or convinced, you know, entrenched belief and something being part of the objective world. And they're just using the word truth in a kind of funny way to describe something that person, a belief a person holds dear or is really important to them. And they say, well, he really believes it. It's true for him. But when they say true for him, what are they? I said, do you mean anything other than he really believes it? And most of the time they'll say, no, I just mean he really believes it. So that, and it's easier, I think, with the metaphysical relativism, like, you know, whether the shape of the earth or whether the earth goes around the sun or vice versa. But the morality is a tough thing to sort of puzzle out. So sometimes relativism gets a big boost from the idea that there is a universal ethical and moral truth that applies to everyone. It seems to be a hard position to argue. Yeah.
So when people say, oh, he has a right to his opinion, are they taking a relativist stance?
Not necessarily to say that's like a, actually that's a view about morality, which is you're stating absolute moral truth there. I suppose you're making a declaration of universal human rights or something, that everyone has a right to his or her own opinion, and it's about like what I suppose that sounds like a universal moral statement on the face of it. Now, the rights can be sort of a questionable thing, too. Does this person mean moral right? Do they mean political right? Like in America, you have a right to your own opinion, I suppose, because the government can't tell you what to believe. And so that's so that'd be like a political right. As a moral right, I don't know if you really have the right to believe anything you want. That might be an interesting question for you. Yeah.
That seems like a kind of a skeptic's point of view to allow people to believe what they want to believe, since we can't say that we know for sure, or we can't know for sure that your knowledge of what people should believe in. We don't really know correspondence of reality.
Yeah, so a skeptic and a relativist might both agree that everyone is entitled to his or her own belief. Although, you'd have to be like a hardcore skeptic. Because a lot of the moderate skeptics will say, well, you should only believe things that you have really good evidence for or proof for. And if you don't, then you're like a bad person and you're not human beauty. We'll come to W.K. Clifford later on, and he says, if you believe anything without sufficient evidence, you've created a stain which can never be wiped away. You've sinned against mankind if you hold an unjustified belief. I think even if you believe the correspondence theory, you could just sort of have a hey, whatever floats your boat attitude. You'd say, oh, you're wrong, but I tell people all this all the time. You're entitled to be wrong. you can be wrong as long as you want, as long as you leave me alone. You're entitled to your belief, however kooky it is. Okay, so let's see. We should get the knowledge here. So, any last questions about correspondence theory of two, relativist theory of truth, difference between a belief statement, proposition, or sentence? Skepticism of the view about knowledge. Knowledge is impossible. Or, difficult to come by. Okay, so for the purpose of this class, we assume correspondence theory of truth because without it, philosophy is a bunch of navel gazing of people sharing their beliefs. And, I could bring in my guitar, but we wouldn't be doing philosophy anymore. We'd be having an encounter group or something. So truth is the way the world is. The task of the philosopher is trying to get knowledge of that truth. So knowledge is of the truth. And so how are truth or knowledge related then?
A justified truth is knowledge.
Yeah, so, knowledge is truth plus justification. Knowledge. Knowledge is truth plus justification. So what's justification?
Proof.
Evidence. Yeah, proof, evidence, an argument, right? Something that, in addition to having a true belief. So what would be an example of a person having like a true belief that would be justified? You think of a case where your belief would be correct and that would correspond with the reality, but you wouldn't have any reason for thinking that it's true. Or maybe there'd be evidence that you would go in totally against it.
Wait, can you say that?
Can you think of a case where your belief would be true and that it would correspond with reality, but you wouldn't have any good reasons for believing it? Or to take the contrary view, can you think of a case where you'd have lots of evidence for something and it turned out that belief was false?
Maybe that you're going to live till you're 90, but you have no facts to prove that.
Yeah, like if I said I'm going to live to be 90 years old, and you say why, and it's like because I'm wearing my Q-ray bracelet. And you say, what's that? I'm like, oh, I bought it on the internet. It sends healing quantum energy to my body, and it's going to make me live. I'm not just going to be 90. I'm going to be 120. That's because this thing's like it's sending that healing energy right now. I can feel it. Right. So if that's my reason, you know, then that's a crappy reason, because a Q-ray bracelet is like snake oil. So there's no scientific evidence behind it. Now, it might turn out that, for example, I have really good genes and I live to be 120. Why? Because all my family's long lived and they have this genes that make me long lived. So I would have truth but not knowledge. It would be a true statement when I say I'm going to live to be 120 years old. But my reason would be a bad reason. I wouldn't provide any evidence for that.
Will it become true once you hit 120 years old?
Yeah, there's a question about statements of the future.
It's not true when you made the statement, which you don't really know.
No, it could still be true even if I don't know it. Because a thing can be true without anyone knowing it. Like Pluto exists. It was true before anyone knew it. It's true now... If I do turn out to be 120, it's true now that I will live to 120 years old. So that might be a case of something that's true about the future. I just wouldn't know. Now, there's a question, you know, does the future exist? You know, can you refer to something that doesn't exist yet? As it gets kind of, statements about the future are somewhat paradoxical. But just think about, like, the statement, like, suppose, six months ago I were to say, President Obama's going to win re-election, and it turned out that he actually did win re-election, as he did. And you come back to me and say, Professor Varda, how did you know Obama's going to win? I saw those numbers, and it was like Romney was like surging in that first debate. Obama did abysmally, and he came back the second one. But you know, I was like really worried about it. It seemed like the momentum was on the side of the Republicans. And I say, well, it was on my lucky 1976 bicentennial quarter. I flipped it. And it was heads, it was Obama, and tails, it was Romney, and it came up heads. So again, that would be like true belief, bad justification, or really no justification. Because it's just random. Now, how about a case where you'd have justification, but without truth? Like really good reasons, but you just turn out to be wrong. Yeah.
Well, I can think of an example of when I used to be a chem major, and we were in lab, and we had to identify an unknown substance, and I had all of this proof, all of the physical and chemical proof that the substance was like magnesium hydroxide, but turned out to be potassium hydroxide. And like, even though I can state, I can write a whole lab report on how the substance is magnesium, in truth, it was not my substance. Mm-hmm.
So all the evidence was pointing one way, and it turned out the truth went another way. And so, and it's hard to think of examples like that. This is why evidence is really good. That it's good to have evidence, because evidence, the more evidence you get, the more likely your belief is to be true. But sometimes all the evidence is, you know, pointing one way, and the truth is the other way. Like maybe, like, you know, Saddam having those stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction might be an example. Because all the intelligence agencies... on the NATO side and allies of the U.S., they all said the Saddam's got these stockpiles of weapons, and they got there and they were nowhere to be seen, or just in small quantities. They had some uranium and some chemicals, but he didn't have like the vast stockpiles we thought he would use. Even his own generals thought that he had these weapons and thought that just their units didn't have them. And so so that was like one of the cases where it was a massive intelligence failure. That's just that all the experts turned out to be wrong, or most of them. So in order to have truth, to have knowledge, though, you have to have true belief and some really good reasons for believing it. So it has to match up with the external world, and you have some proof for it, and then it would count as knowledge. And the question is, how much proof do you need to sort of get over that threshold of a belief being justified? And that can be a thorny issue. So we'll delve into some of the particulars later in the course. So next week we're starting with Descartes. So read through at least like the second meditation material on Descartes in the text. And I'll cover Plato's allegory of the cave, which isn't in the text. And we'll talk about those first and second meditations. And I'll show you a little clip from The Matrix, which actually is all about Descartes' meditations.